Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
There's been a recent spate of news covering that casts doubt on the usefulness of antidepressants. That coverage is coming from a number of clinical trials and it's deeply concerned eminent psychiatrist Professor Gordon Parker. Now, he's the founder of the Black Dog Institute. You might remember we spoke with him sometime last year about a novel that he'd written, in fact. Professor Parker is worried that people will use the misinformation circulating about depression medication and then decide to stop taking their antidepressants. And that, of course, would be a massive problem. But the coverage misunderstands the nature of the research that's being done. And in fact, it's asking the wrong questions. Professor Parker likens this issue to saying that Ventolin, used to treat asthma, would be good for every lung condition, which obviously it isn't. In the same way as Ventolin is good for treating asthma, antidepressants are a good treatment for depression if you have the sort of depression that the antidepressants are designed to treat. Well, how do we get to the bottom of all of this? Professor Parker explained to me that depression isn't just one thing. It is, in fact, a very broad term for a range of things.
To my mind, there's a real problem with the concept of major depression. It's frequently positioned as if it is an entity, a single condition, a disease, and so on and so forth. But it's no more than an umbrella term encapsulating differing types of depression. And the analogy I would use would be, if you went to your GP and your GP said, look, I know why you're like you are and why you're suffering. You've got major breathlessness. You wouldn't be particularly informed because you'd want to know whether you had, say, asthma or pneumonia or a pulmonary embolus because you know with that specific diagnosis you would get a bronchodilator, an antibiotic or an anticoagulant. Yes. And so medicine subtypes and says, okay, well, look, we've got general categories of disorders like, you know, breathlessness conditions, but that's not particularly informative. We actually have to dig deeper and say, what is the actually specific condition? What's its cause? And then we tie our treatment in with it.
From a non-specialist point of view, then, is it possible to say how many different types of depression there are?
There are various models. For over 2,000 years, there was a so-called binary model, meaning two types. Mm. And the first type was, for quite a long period of time, called endogenous, because it seemed to come from within. And, in fact, you can go back to St. Paul to the Corinthians and read of this type of depression coming from God, because it was seemingly inexplicable that somebody would be travelling along in life without any stresses and suddenly they'd get this paralysing depression. And so there was one type that was called endogenous, and these days we call it melancholia. Mm. And basically it is a genetic condition. It's got some key characteristics. It's very, very physical, and it responds superbly to medication as against placebo. So basically the response rate to an antidepressant is about 60% and to a placebo it's about 10%. So if you cut out from major depression the melancholic subgroup, then in fact the antidepressants show clear superiority and you probably only need 50 to 100 patients to demonstrate that.
Yes.
But that's not what is done in the trials that gets these drugs licensed.
Well, and apart from endogenous depression, then there are many others and some of them involve life circumstances.
Yeah, so the binary model contrasted the biological depression with so-called reactive depressions, which are, you know, pretty understandable, is where somebody has been demeaned and diminished and they feel pretty hopeless and worthless as a consequence.
Mm.
And this is not seen as a biological type of depression, but often just simply reflecting the impact of stress and sometimes reflecting the impact of stress on an individual's personality, and where the case for medication is far less clear. So that's the key problem, that in fact evaluating whether antidepressants are effective or ineffective against a non-specific group almost guarantees that you'll get a non-specific answer. And I just use another analogy here. Let's go back to major breathlessness.
Yeah.
Let's imagine for the moment that some company invents a super anti-asthma drug. It's just brilliantly effective. But instead of testing it against 100 people versus placebo with asthma. They tested against 100 people in each group with major breathlessness, and only, say, 5 or 10% have asthma. Then the drug would not separate from the placebo, and you'd end up concluding that the drug was ineffective. And so that sort of nonsense, that lack of logic, I think is helpful to understanding the backstory as to why we've got these huge data sets, wonderful data sets, and, you know, intelligent people analysing them and yet coming up to conclusions that variably that they're ineffective or antidepressants are marginally effective, the consequence of which is a result of, as I said, faulty logic.
I guess one of the questions that leaps to mind immediately is, are GPs, who are the front line, are they sufficiently able to distinguish between the different types of depression? Because they are prescribing a lot of antidepressants.
Yes. It's hard to generalise, but I think you could say the answer is not limited to GPs. I mean, there are many psychiatrists even that don't necessarily believe in the concept of melancholia.
Really?
And who subscribe to the concept of major depression as if that's a diagnosis in and of itself.
Yes.
So the real problem with the management of depression in this country, and it's the same, I think, in all other Western countries, that the treatment that you get for depression type X is more likely to be determined by the background training or discipline of the practitioner rather than by any of the characteristic features of the depression.
Hmm.
So if you go with depression type X to a GP, you'll probably get an antidepressant drug. Go to a psychologist, you'll probably get cognitive behaviour therapy.
Hmm.
Go to a counsellor, you'll get counselling. Go to a lady wearing a caftan and you'll get crystal therapy. That's the Procrustean model, where the patient is being fitted to the background training of the practitioner as against the rest of medicine, which says, okay, what's going on here? What's the cause? What's the condition? And therefore they try and tie the treatment to the cause.
But the funny thing is that I know people who've had exactly the experience you've just described.
Yep, yep.
And it makes me wonder then how many people in our community with very treatable depression are just not getting the right treatment because, well, we... Well, would you tell me, because we don't have a proper training or what?
I think there are a number of factors going on. One is that we have the dominant American model, which categorises depressions as either major depression or and then assumes a group of minor depressions, so which is basically a dimensional model. And that means basically there's a dominant model in the last 40 years of seeing depression as a single condition and simply varying by severity.
Yeah.
Against that, there was the old-fashioned binary model of seeing, you know, melancholic depression, the disease, versus environmental depressions.
Yes.
And what I've obviously been arguing for a long period of now, that there are multiple types of depression, some of which are biological and do brilliantly and have great advantages if you prescribe, you know, medication. And then there's a group of what we call non-melancholic depressions reflecting, you know, stressful events and personality styles, some where an antidepressant drug can be very helpful. So people who are worriers and who have a level of emotional dysregulation, they frequently do extremely well with certain types of antidepressant drugs. So I'm not ruling antidepressant drugs out for the non-melancholic group entirely. But basically, the argument I'm putting is that there are multiple differing expressions of depression, and where there is a literature saying here medication is best, here cognitive behavior therapy is best, here counseling is best. But unfortunately, not many people are well trained in that sort of subtyping model.
Our guest on Open House is Professor Gordon Parker. He is the founder of the Black Dog Institute, probably is what you're best known for, but Professor of Psychiatry at the University of New South Wales. Well, this is a worry. I mean, there are many people listening now, I feel quite sure, who are concerned about their relatives, their friends, their loved ones, or themselves.
Indeed.
Am I getting the right treatment? Is this why it's not getting any better? So how is a person to access the best information?
It's very difficult because, as I say, the dominant model that people will read about is the dimensional model.
Yeah.
But, I mean, certainly at the Black Dog Institute, we set up educational programs that were designed to assist practitioners, at least, to be more aware of the depressive subtypes.
Yes.
And that means also detecting bipolar disorder, because that's another big issue. There are many people, in fact, the great majority of people with a bipolar disorder initially get diagnosed as having simply depression mm-hmm. and put on an antidepressant. So there does need to be more sophistication amongst practitioners. But again, I think that maybe that would be advanced by people who have a depressive condition or a family member being aware of the problems and actually asking some searching questions. So, for example, if you went to your GP and the GP said, well, yeah, I know exactly what's going on, you've got major depression, you'd say, well, look, I've heard of that, but, you know, I understand it's not particularly specific. You know, do you think I've got the biological type, the melancholic type or some other type? Now, that will then sort of give some indication as to whether that practitioner is up to speed with recognizing differing types and so on and so forth. And if that's not occurring, then in fact there may be wisdom in seeking somebody who does have greater sophistication in being able to subtype the differing depressive disorders and then come up with more appropriate, you know, recommendations, be they drug or non-drug.
Oh, absolutely. That's a clear conclusion from what you've said. But my mind goes to those people without access to information, without even the ability to understand really what's being said about them or to them, to young people who won't seek help, to others suffering stigma. It seems, does it seem to you, Professor, that we've come so far and yet there is so far to go?
Yes, we've come a long way. I think Australia has destigmatised depression better than any other country in the world.
Oh, really? Wow.
I think that's largely because of, you know, the differing organisations.
The Black Dog Institute, foremost amongst them.
And I think it came about because we had so many politicians and sportsmen that were widely known and respected talking openly about their depression. So we've done well in destigmatising. And then the next stage is, well, okay, people now know that you can talk more about depression and you can seek help. But the problem is the general recommendation is go see your GP, and that's pretty reasonable. GPs in Australia, I think, have taken up the management of depression far better than I'd initially anticipated. But GPs vary, and, you know, if your GP is somebody who doesn't really believe in depression, and if the patient walks in and as soon as the word depression is raised, the GP drops his or her eyes and starts writing out a prescription, then in fact you may not be getting the sophisticated management that you want. I'm going to make a very risky and terrible generalization here, but actually my view is that female general practitioners have taken up the management of depression in this country far better than men, and in support of that, we did a study. We looked at referral notes from male and female GPs for patients with depression. And from male GPs, the average referral note was 22 words, I think it was. And from females, it was about 150. And then when we interviewed patients, the male GP spent about an average of 10 minutes with a depressed patient. Mm. And the female GP spent about 30 to 40 minutes.
Wow.
So there's been some good take-up by GPs. But again, it depends on the sophistication of their education about how to manage depression.
How interesting. Well, as always, people who want more information about the things we've just discussed might start with perhaps the Black Dog Institute's own website.
Indeed.
And then go and seek some good help. Professor, thank you. It's always good talking to you, and we do appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
Gordon Parker, founder of the Black Dog Institute, and you can Google Black Dog Institute, and that'll be the best way to get to their website, find out some more information. There's a lot of good information around about depression and how it's treated. There's also a lot of poor information around. A couple of tips from that Gordon Parker interview. Maybe if your GP doesn't seem knowledgeable and doesn't want to talk to you about it, then find another GP who does. Those were fascinating statistics that male GPs spend far less time talking to their patients than female GPs. That's interesting stuff. And on the text line, hi, my name's Alice. I'm taking antidepressant medication. It's making a difference because I suffer from borderline personality disorder, and it's been a journey getting the correct medication to work for me. However, it does have to be changed every couple of years. Sounds like you're on a good treatment regime. You've got some good help there, Alice. And that's really important. I'm so pleased to hear it. That's how it ought to be. But if it's not working for you, go and get more advice.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.